This audio comes to you from the Science of Mind archives.
Taking up our treatment, let us remember that treatment is something we do to ourselves for someone else, so that we shall be relieved of every sense of compelling something to happen and arrive at a quiet consciousness that the words we speak are true, and that as a result of them, the meaning implied in these words, operating through the words, will definitely, in the law of mind, accomplish what is implied in the word. Now, it's very simple, but it is also very subtle. When Jesus said, "It is done unto you as you believe," he announced the principle. When you have to sneeze, you have to sneeze, don't you? It's like when you itch, you must scratch or be in misery. He announced a principle so simple that most everyone overlooked it. I didn't give it due consideration. He announced a principle so profound that most no one saw the meaning of it. It is done unto you as you believe could be applied to every law in nature. It is done, the laws of nature operate for us the way we use them. Now, since this law is also a law in nature, the law of mind in action, it would have to be. Since it also is a law in nature, but since it is a law of mind, it is a law of intelligence. Eddington said, "All law is intelligence acting as law." Jean said that there is an infinite thinker thinking mathematically. Now that means the same thing Jesus said. There is a law that responds creatively and intelligently, but just because it's a law of intelligence, its response to us is a reflection of our action in it. The response is a correspondence. In other words, it's like an image in a mirror. The image is held in front of the mirror definitely. It's a definite image. We know what we're doing when we put it there. We can hold it there, or we may withdraw it, whatever it is that we desire to do. Now, the image does not know that it is in front of the mirror. The mirror does not know that the image is in front of it. The reflection of the image in the mirror does not know that it is a reflection, and the image doesn't know that it's an image. Sounds very confusing, this prelude to our talk this morning, the law of mind in action, or how to use it. We'll never know how to use it unless we understand these things. Some will say, "Well, that's very difficult to understand." It is very simple. I planted two or three different kinds of bulbs yesterday. Now, I did not see the pattern in the bulbs. They're just bulbs. But there is a pattern in the bulb. So, in the same grounds, I planted three different kinds of bulbs. I'll plant some more today, but I don't want anybody to know because it's Sunday, and it's probably wicked to do it on Sunday. I thought I'd be good all the morning, and this afternoon I'd go out and not be good. By way of variety, after all, you don't get... Life must not be monotonous. Now, these bulbs didn't know that they're bulbs. The pattern in the bulb of a lily, canna, and other things, dahlia, they don't know they're dahlias. The creative soil does not know that three kinds of things are planted fairly close together. And here are some rose bushes over here. And there goes the hymn. Gravity is no respecter of persons. This is supposed to be a holy book. Rather interesting, isn't it? Jesus said he causes his son to come alike on the just and the unjust. The universe is governed by law, but there is a person, infinite person in it, and we are people in it. Now, let us say that the plant, the bulb, is like an image held in front of a mirror. The image does not know it's in front of the mirror. The bulb does not know that it's planted. The mirror does not know that it is reflecting the image. The soil does not know that it is merely creating a reflection of the image in the plant. Now, this is important. When you and I give a treatment or use the law of mind and action, that's the way it works. We are holding up, as it were, an image. We are not holding a thought to make something happen or pushing or pulling. We are holding up an image. There is a law reflecting that image creatively. The image does not know that it's an image. The reflection does not know that it's a reflection. If they did, they might not remain an image and a reflection. We have to depend upon the mechanics, the mathematics. Now, this is why Jesus said, it's done unto you as you believe. So very simple, we overlook it. So profound that we do not appreciate the depth of its meaning. Who is there living if he completely knew and absolutely accepted that there is a principle of mind around him receiving the impress of his thought and reacting to him or whoever he mentions in it, would not think this is the greatest thing in life? There isn't anyone who wouldn't be glad to. There isn't anyone who would not experiment with it. That's what treatment is. So as we let go of everything else and turn within our own consciousness to the realization of the indwelling divine presence, we accept that there is one life, that life is God, that life is our life, and that life is perfect right now. All the power that there is, all the presence that there is, and all the life that there is God, the living Spirit Almighty. As each turns to himself and says there is one life, that life is perfect, that life is God, that life is my life now, in and around and through me now, there is one perfect life. I accept this life. I know that it is perfect circulation, assimilation, and elimination. I accept that every organ and action and function of this physical body is in accord with divine harmony, perfect joy, and perfect love. There is one life. That life is God. That life is perfect. That life is my life. And as a result of this statement, whatever contradicts that is removed and harmony is established. This word being the presence and the power and the action of the living spirit in me is intelligence accomplishing a definite purpose. And it will accomplish that purpose, and I accept it. Now there is one divine intelligence governing my affairs. Therefore, I know what to do at all times, under every circumstance and situation whatsoever, and under every condition. There is a divine intelligence within me. Knows what to do under every circumstance, every situation, whatsoever. Therefore, the way is prepared before me in joy and in peace. It is my desire to bless everything, to help everything, to bring gladness and joy and power and prosperity and wholeness to every person and place and thing I contact. And so right now, I accept all the good that there is, all the love that there is, all the health and happiness that there is, for myself and for everyone else. And so it is. Now we continue with our subject, which I've been discussing so far, the law of mind in action. What is the principle and the operation, and how do we use it in what we call spiritual mind treatment, which is using spiritual consciousness for a definite and deliberate purpose. Today in America, there are 15 or 20 million people who believe as we do. They are among the most intelligent people in the United States. They do constitute the most definitely advanced spiritual group of people in the world. They are making some definite attempt to demonstrate or prove that we are surrounded by, immersed in, and there is in us a universal intelligence which governs all things and which is in intimate relationship to us. Now, they have a lot of different names. There's divine science, religious science, Christian science. I feel they all teach the same thing, but they don't all feel it. Therefore, I never argue or debate that. It doesn't interest me. Somebody was saying to me the other day, well, what one of the apostles, how old was he? I said, I don't know. Well, they said, where did he come from? I said, I don't know. They asked me about 8 questions, and I said, I don't know. And he looked at me in a rather disgusted way. He said, what do you know about him? I said, very little, and moreover, I am not interested what kind of underwear he wore. I am only interested in what he said, and is it true, and can it be proven? Is it logical? Is it inspirational? I do not care where he came from, what his name was, nor what happened to him, nor how he died, nor when he got resurrected. That's his business. We will never learn anything by just trying to read the lives of the great people and see what kind of a rock they sat on in meditation. It's all nonsense and a waste of time. What is the truth? That's all we're after. What did Jesus say? What did Plato say? What did some other prophet say? There are 250 different religious groups in America, and they all believe in God. There are 40 or 50 different modern metaphysical movements, and they all believe in the law that we can use. Now, we are interested not in our peculiarities. We're all a little bit peculiar, I suppose. If we're not, we ought to be, because we're individuals. It was not for nothing that God made us a little different. But the same life runs through us all. We are interested, with this 15 or 20 million people, to see to what degree, to what extent, can we as individuals use the law of good for a definite purpose? To what degree is it possible for you and for me to prove, as a result of something we do inside our own consciousness, that there is a spiritual mind force that is completely independent of anything that is happening, of anything that has happened, or of anything that looks as though it were about to happen? To what degree will spiritual thought help to heal physical disease, financial trouble, and personal inhibitions? Now, somebody might say, well, that's very selfish. All right, that is very selfish. But we exist for self-expression. It may be selfish to put butter on our bread. It may be selfish to go to a theater. I love the theater. And I like butter on my bread. In a certain sense, everything that we do is selfish, but it doesn't have to be selfish from the standpoint of, I want a good beyond yours. Of course we exist to express the self. There isn't any doubt about that. The person that expresses the most life will live the most. It doesn't mean that he robs someone else of life. Certainly, if you are happy, it doesn't rob me any. If I refuse to be happy, is it necessary for you to become unhappy out of sympathy for me? Then you'll have two unhappy people. Jesus said, and I, if I be lifted up, will draw all men unto me. There is nothing morbid in our religion. We believe, or at least I do, that man exists as the delight of God, the self-expression of God, the manifestation of God, the extension of God, and so does all other creation. There is, I believe, a creativity pressing against everything. The other night, we had at a small party a very fine actor, a very fine producer, a very fine physician, and we were discussing, and someone said, what is creativity? And I took the position that what I do is more creative than what the ordinary actor does, just for the sake of argument. There was a woman there who was a very fine painter. He is the wife of the very fine physician. I said, what she does is creative, because she sets a canvas up and something new is breathed onto it. It isn't a copy, it's a creation. And then they talk, well, what is creativity? And I said, it's just my idea. I believe that there is a creativity, a creative impulsion, pressing against everything, flowing through everything, that it shall express the delight of its own being. Now, that's very simple, but I think that's what creativity is. I believe it's universal, it's God. I think it's in everything. The child who makes mud cakes, somebody else who builds a big building, it's all the same thing. Now this creativity is more than an impulsion, it's an intelligence. And it acts as a law. And that's why it is in psychology that it is said the libido must have an object. They are talking about the creativity too. It must do something. The ego must not be rejected. It must express something. When it does, what Kunkel called the unlived life builds up as an inner conflict, and the creativity is stagnated, and it doesn't go outward to express life. And that's what a repression is. It is when the original creativity that presses against everything doesn't get a chance to come out and do its stuff. What is this other than the delight of the Creator? I believe that. Jesus said, God is spirit, Father seeketh such, the wind bloweth where it listeth, and no man knoweth from whence it cometh or whither it goeth, and so is everyone who is born of the kingdom. I believe this creativity is against everything, pressing through, and that we exist for the delight of the Creator. Seems natural to me that we ought not to be frustrated. Now, I know that we are. I do not say that people are not ill or poor or unhappy. I merely say, can it be designed that they should be? Is this not a part of our ignorance from which enlightenment alone shall be able to extricate or save us? Is it not probable that that salvation is in our own hands because we are individuals? Now, something new is happening in the world, in these modern metaphysical movements. As I say, 15 or 20 million people believe that we are surrounded by God the living spirit and the law of mind in action. Now the difference is this. You and I are persons. But there is a mind principle in us that reacts subjectively to our thoughts, feelings, and emotions. This is what is back of what is called psychosomatic medicine. Psychiatry, analytical psychology, psychoanalysis, and spiritual and psychological counseling to redirect consciously the stream of creativity that flows through the individual, that it shall not be repressed into fear and doubt and morbidity and rejection and guilt and the frustration of a lack of self-expression, to clear the channel that which I think must be God shall find fulfillment through us. God, of course, is not frustrated, but we are. Now we want to believe, and I do believe, that we are not only surrounded by this divine creativity, which is God the Spirit, like we are persons, this is infinite, but that there is a reaction to our thought from a creative field that's mechanical, that reacts mathematically, just as I discussed the beginning of our meditation as an image and a reflection. And if we'll put that all together, we shall have the reason and the cause back of conscious, spiritual, mind practice, which 15 or 20 million people at least in America today, and I wouldn't be surprised if more now. Remember people like Peel stirring up millions of new ideas. I mean, stirring up the thought of millions of new people who don't go quite as far as we do. But he's along the same track as far as he goes, doing terrific good, because those people will never stop until they get what you and I have. The very fact that they can think positively or affirmatively and have something happen and shoot a prayer at somebody, as he says, and help them, will finally lead them to the realization that they exist in a universal medium which reacts creatively to their thought, and that is the whole principle. Therefore, the whole practice is thinking in such a way that the reaction will be affirmative. Now, to begin with, we have to realize that we're full of negative thoughts in this so-called unconscious of ours, in this other side of the mind, in which appears to be stored the memories of the ages and so forth, and our own previous experiences. There appears to be something in us that denies it. For instance, suppose when you go home, you sit down, you say, now I have a friend, he's very ill. I want to work for him. Several nights ago, an Episcopal clergyman, a friend of mine in another part of the state, called up and he said, I'm very ill, they don't know just what is wrong. He himself has a degree in medicine. And I said, all right, I'll work for you. Well, I worked for him off and on all day, and whatever was wrong got right. Now, I said, this word is for this man. This is the truth about him. So I went on and explained to myself why I believe he is a spiritual being, announcing that this word is a law of elimination to everything that doesn't belong. I believe in medicine, in surgery, in diet, in exercise, in anything and everything that'll work. I have no single superstition. Unfortunately, a lot of new superstitions come in with a new order, but I don't like superstition. Everything in the universe is in accord with law and order, action and reaction, and is intelligent. And the world needs all the good it can have. I was working for this man at the spiritual level in my mind. Now, something must have happened, and how could it happen? Was I praying to a God up there to do something to this man over here? Was I holding thoughts and concentrating power? Was I sending out thoughts to hit him in the liver? I don't know whether there's anything wrong with his liver. No, of course not. The universe is only one system. There's only one mind. And when we identify our word with anything, it's just like that thing were inside us. You don't have to send anything out. You don't have to hold anything. You don't have to will anything. You don't have to concentrate anything. Somebody said to me recently, you ought to learn concentration. Well, I said, I guess that's good. But I'm too busy using the thing whose center is everywhere and whose circumference is nowhere. What do I concentrate if I plant a seed? Not a thing. Nothing. Nothing at all. Nothing. I put the seed in the soil, take care of it, and have a great conviction that there is an intelligence and a creativity greater than I am. Now, what do I do if I say this word is the presence and the power and the activity of the Spirit in me for John Smith, who lives at such and such an address, whether I ever knew him or not, if he sent me his address? I, first of all, identify my word with this person. That is, I know that this is for this person. You couldn't treat somebody or pray for somebody unless you knew who you're treating or praying for. But the moment you do that, you forget where the person is, what he is doing. You don't say, now at a certain period, recline and get receptive, and then I'll shoot a thought at you. I don't know what that's all about. It's no good. It will interfere with the thing you want to do, because you'll never know whether it got there and hit him in the right spot. Never. If you do it on will, you'll never know whether you had enough will. If you do it on concentration, you'll never know whether you've concentrated. Probably get a headache and get cross-eyed. But if you do it as we use every other law in nature, definitely, specifically, consciously, yes, but in a certain sense, effortlessly. Be still and know. Now, we would have to believe then, and you and I do believe, but maybe we don't believe enough or use it well enough, there is but one life in the universe, that's God. We call it God. Perfect. That life is the life of this person. That we can accept. That life is perfect. Therefore, through the realization of that life manifesting in this person, whatever does not belong is now eliminated from him. You try these things. They're not formulas. They're just suggested methods of operation. And everyone's going to have to prove this to himself anyway. And you'll have to work out your method. And you'll have to use it, and then getting results, you'll say, well, at least this much I know. And you'll find it's very simple. Now, the law of mind in action, then, means to us individually that something operates upon our word the way we speak it, the way we think it, the way we believe it, the way we embody it. Therefore, there would be days when our word would be more effective than other days. Are there not days when a singer sings better? This is a creative act, too. Are there not times when you feel more capable? Isn't it natural that there should be days when your spiritual awareness is deeper? When your abandonment to what you've done is more complete? An artist will paint better at some times than at others. But if he persists, he will always be able to do creative work. We cannot depend just on the inspiration of the moment, although that's good. There is a definite technique, as I have described in that little brochure there, for spiritual mind treatment. And if you follow it, I think you'll get a result. I never knew anyone to fail who really followed this. I said, I have no superstition. When these things are known, definitely, accepted in their simplicity and used, there won't be a school of surgery or medicine in the world that does not teach them. Not one. Because they're true. We do not deny the body or the mind. we affirm the spirit. So we say just as there is psychosomatic medicine, there is also, now psychosomatic means body, mind. Psyche means the soul, the feminine. And the body is its complement. But as the Greek said, man is pneuma, psyche, and soma. That means spirit, soul, and body. That's why you find it in our Bible. Pneuma means spirit, psyche, soul. Pneuma is the masculine, psyche is the feminine. Soma is the neutral. Therefore, there will be an action of the spirit on the mind and an action of the mind in, through, and as the body. Therefore, we will say spiritual psychosomatics is something that we shall necessarily have to accept. That's why Carl Jung said he'd never seen a permanent healing without faith, a restoration of faith. Now then, we believe in spiritual psychosomatics. Let the mind think spiritually. Now, what does that mean? Think from the standpoint, there is one life, that life is God, that life is perfect, that life is my life. There is no frustration in that life. There is no overaction, wrong action, or false action in that life. There is nothing wrong with the life of God. The life of God is this person's life. This is spiritual psychosomatic. The law of the psyche and the soma will be subject to the law of the pneuma. Now that's only saying the first principle will include the two below it. Completely logical, it's perfectly rational, it's in line with everything we know, and it is the next step in the field of psychiatry and psychosomatics, which many doctors and some psychologists are taking, but which the materialist takes very reluctantly because he doesn't want to feel that there is a hidden meaning in everything in the universe. But there is. And there is a hidden presence in everything in the universe. And there is a spiritual double to every person who ever lived. Socrates called it his daemon. There is, in my opinion, a spiritual presence that accompanies us throughout life, which is the real person. I cannot account. But what can happen otherwise? The inspiration, the illumination, sudden flashes of meaning, the depth of consciousness and creativity, the genius of the human mind and the purpose, the divine purpose in the human soul. I think that there is a witness in everything we do. Walt Whitman said there is more to a man than is contained between his head and his bootstrap. Now the Hindus call this Atman. It's called Buddha by the Buddhists, the Buddhic. It's called Christ by the Christians. And it means the incarnation of God in each one of us. The universal man, in which I believe, because every man is the center in the consciousness of God. Now this is what is behind spiritual psychosomatics and the law of mind in action. Now all you have to do is to test this out. Suppose you do something as simple as this someday. Say, I want a lot of new friendship. I want a lot of new ideas. I want a lot of new experiences. I don't even know what they are, but I accept I've got them. divine intelligence, universal intelligence, the mind of God, the law of good, whatever you want to call it, is now reacting to me as new situations, new circumstances, a new influx of good, and then think of all the good you can think of, not necessarily specifically, for instance. Think how many stars there are in the heavens. No man has ever counted them. Think how many grains of sand there are on the ocean. And then think that each one is separate and individual in the whole. That's the way it is with you and with me. There is a creativity within us. Then think of all the love there must be, and joy and self-expression. Think of all the songs that are being sung. I went over the other night to see a big television show because I'm going on television in September and I want to learn what I can about it between now and then, so I won't fall flat on my face. That might break my nose. And I understand that's very painful. Think of it all. And as I sat there and the songs and the dances and the direction and the confusion, I said, we watched them rehearse for an hour. They'd been rehearsing for days. I said, my heavens, will they ever get order out of this chaos? The fellow who's the head of the show, he said, yes, you'll be surprised. I was sitting beside of a producer and a director. I said, this is going to be a terrible thing. And it was nothing but confusion. But there was a pattern working in it. And it was very fascinating to me, because this is one of the big shows. Millions of people see it. And I thought then, it's an interesting thing. You know, they're not making any impression on the home. They're not sending out thoughts to the home. They are doing something right in front of this here mechanical stuff, which I don't understand much about. And there is a universal transmitter, but wherever in any one of these homes somebody tunes in to this wavelength, they'll see this show. It will look as though the people were in their room and they'll hear them. How terrific. Well, if we can see that on the physical vibration, how much more it ought to be possible to accept, if we believe in this thing, that if I say there is a divine intelligence that knows how to bring new situations, new songs, new dances, it'll do it. Every creative writer has the experience of times when the thing does not flow. He gets confused, he sometimes gets tired, he might become distracted. He seeks to recapture the genius, if such it be, and I guess it is to some degree, you know, all of us, of this thing which is so elusive. And sometimes he just waits for it. Other times he sits down, begins to write and dictate until finally it catches on. But it'll always catch on. And he feels a great release and a great relief. And he knows now that he is again consciously reunited with the source of his inspiration. That must be God. Who shall say that God is only the one who answers a sad prayer? Don't you think God answers everything? Why, of course. And it will always be in accord with our own action and reaction. I don't think it's too much to say that the potentiality of all genius is latent and inherent in everything and everyone. It must be, or we wouldn't be here. But to believe in the simplicity of saying this word is for myself or this man, new thoughts, new ideas are going to come to him. new experiences, new friends, whether you know whether they are or not, you are planting the idea. You can send to Washington and get seeds that you know nothing about. We sent somewhere through the mail answering something almost I never did before in my life, some crazy announcement about a new kind of a flowering plant. I had to send back to New York to get it. Imagine California importing any plant from New York. It's almost disloyal, isn't it? Now, I don't know what the thing's going to look like, but it knows what it will look like. And it'll have to look like what's in it when it's planted. And if I say to myself, new experiences are coming, new thoughts, new influx of abundance, I am one with all the abundance in the universe, all the love, all the friendship, all the life, all the truth, all the joy, all the intelligence. You know, when I treat myself and others, somewhere along the line I generally say, I am, or this person, all the intelligence that there is, all the love, all the joy, all the exhilaration, all the vitality and enthusiasm, all the zest for life and energy and action that there is in the universe is flowing through this person or myself. It's very good treatment, too. You try it someday. And if I'm treating for a person who doesn't sleep, I always say, this person sleeps in peace and wakes in joy and lives in a consciousness of good. There is no anxiety. There is nothing can keep people from resting. In other words, your words cover the need. People say, well, what word shall I use? Don't worry about that. I'm not thinking of the words I'm using now, and neither are you. We're thinking of ideas. That's all. And you meet somebody in the street, you say, hello, it's a good day, isn't the sun nice, and what have you been doing? You don't stop to think of the words you're using. And when they describe what they've been doing, they don't. And you go down and see the sunset, and you say, it's beautiful. I could never be bothered with semantics. It confuses me to wonder what are the meanings of the word I use, because I know the meaning of the word I use. That's all that's necessary. So does God. If I say to you, I love you, you know what I'm talking about. I don't have to explain now this is the difference between the love of children and my love for you, and it's different for the love of money and the love of power and the love of God. I say, I love you. And I have embraced you in my thought, and you know it. You don't have to wonder about the words. The words will articulate themselves. Let the words be that which falls from the lips of a mind that is now not concentrating, but thinking on a different level. The spontaneous combustion of nature will always give you the right word. Don't worry about it at all. Don't wonder if you're good enough. You are just as good as the best and as bad as the worst. And so is everyone else. Don't wonder if God or the law is going to hear you. Do you know enough? Well, if you didn't when you came in here, you do now because I've told you all I know. It wasn't much. It's surprisingly little and must be very disappointing. But it is so much more than nothing that all things can come out of it. It's terrific. Keep it simple. Then don't say, well, I don't feel I've had experience enough, and when I learn all, you've learned about all anybody will ever teach you. There is surprisingly little that anyone can teach us. It is the feeling we get from them that teaches us, not the words. The few simple explanations. Jesus, so simple that they overlooked his simplicity and didn't know it was profound. Socrates and Plato and Aristotle and Plotinus and Anaxagoras, all of these Thales. And They talked a language which for 2,000 to 2,500 years people have been trying to understand what they were talking about, because they knew they had something terrific. And I've studied both. And I think I understand what they were talking about. Profoundness should be simplicity, and simplicity should be profound. You do not have to have an intellect like Emerson or be a poet like Browning, but rather like the child whom Jesus said is symbolic of the kingdom of God. Believe in your own word, because you believe in what reacts to it. And out of this silence of your own soul, there comes a testimony of the Spirit. And as a result of the testimony of the Spirit, the Word becomes flesh and dwells among you. And you behold it. And like the man in the Bible, whom they said, rest assured, it is not so. He said, but one thing I know. Whereas I was blind, now I see.
For more spiritual content like this, visit scienceofmindarchives.com.